Welcome back to the Football Fitness Federation podcast. This is episode 288. This episode is with lead rehabilitation strength and conditioning coach at Arsenal Women, Owen Clarkin. Owen came on and we talked about how his role was transitioned into this role, including a big focus around rehabilitation. So we spoke about the role of a rehab S&C. We talked about shaping the rehab process, the approach to design, planning and decision making along the rehab process as well, monitoring rehab, and then also utilising the multidisciplinary team, the importance of collaboration, the evolving department at Arsenal, and also his evolution as a practitioner as well. So plenty to come in this episode, and I hope you enjoy it. I just wanted to bring your attention to an event, a webinar that we've got coming up very soon. So that's on the 8th of May. It's going to be from 2 till 5pm, that is UK time. We're linking up with Hawking Dynamics to bring you this webinar. We've got some brilliant speakers. We've got James Collins, who's Football Market Manager at Hawking Dynamics. We've also got Dr. John McMahon, Director of Education and Research at Hawking Dynamics as well. And Joey Harty, who's recently on the podcast, Director of Sports Performance and Science at Sporting Kansas City. He's going to be presenting, as well as Alfonso Thompson, who's Head of Strength Conditioning Coach at Sporting Kansas City as well. So the webinar is all going to be around force and football. So you're going to hear from those four presenters. You also have an opportunity to ask questions as well. So make sure you come and join us. I will post a link to sign up. It's a free webinar. The link to sign up will be in the show notes. Hopefully you can make it. And any recordings, we've already been asked a few times about the recording of the webinar, that will be uploaded to our online community as well. So online community members will get access to the recording of the webinar if you can't make it live. So go and check it out. Just before we get into the episode, a massive thank you to our sponsors, The Good Prep. The Good Prep is a meal prep delivery service that provides fresh, ready-to-eat, chef-cooked meals straight to your door. They offer meal plans tailored to your personal goals, current activity level and schedule. The Good Prep works closely with elite level athletes and corporates to develop meal solutions that meet the ever-changing demands of performance and training. Their clients include Brighton Hove Albion, the PGMOL, Commonwealth Teams, Gymshark and many more. Their meals are full of all the nutrients you need to keep you in peak performance so you can achieve every goal you set. Plus, you can reclaim your time, eat better, move more, and reduce food waste too. Their meal plans are designed to guide you through your journey to a healthier you. Take the guesswork out of healthy eating and discover the power of nutrition at thegoodprep.com and make sure you use the code FOOTBALL15 for 15% off your first order. This podcast is brought to you by Hytro, the number one BFR brand in pro sport, helping teams and athletes improve performance and recover faster with their blood flow restriction wearables. Built for sport, proven by science, check out hytro.com to find out more. And also make sure you go and check out Rezl, doing some great work in the world of VR, the world's leading VR sports trainer, and they most recently announced a partnership with the Premier League as well, to shape the future of football experiences for fans and players. So amazing work being done at Rezl. Make sure you go and check them out at Rezl over on socials. Let's get into the episode now. Episode 288 with lead rehabilitation strength and conditioning coach at Arsenal Women, Owen Clarkin.
Rezl is the world's number one virtual reality sports trainer. Whatever your team, your sport, your ability, improve your game and train like a pro. Rezl. Reactions, performance, accuracy, stamina, resilience. Train at home in the Rezl Sports and Fitness VR Training Arena. Search Rezl, R-E-Z-Z-I-L. Harder, stronger, smarter. The world's number one virtual reality sports trainer. Available now on MetaQuest.
Welcome back to the Football Fitness Federation podcast. This is episode 288. I'm delighted to welcome onto the podcast today Owen Clarkin. Owen, how are we doing?
Good, Ben. Thanks very much for having me on. And sorry it's taken so long to get on the podcast.
No problem at all, mate. We've been through a few technical issues getting this one going, but we're going now, which is good. So no, I appreciate you coming on. Owen, give us a little bit of background on yourself just to kick things off.
Yeah, so I suppose my career started about 17 years ago. I started as a football coach, and I was actually only 16 years of age myself. I was working with my local club while I was still playing, and I started working with, I suppose, young kids, kind of under 7, under 8 kind of age group. And it was probably a little bit of pocket money on the side at this stage. And this is where I probably developed my passion for coaching and developing players. And although these players were quite young, they developed quite fast, and I got a real kind of, I suppose, a buzz out of that. They were at that age that wasn't too serious, and it was fun, and there was energy, and I probably was just finding my own kind of coaching style and personality, but it was new. I knew it was something I wanted to do. And this led me on to my next club, which was a club called Cherry Orchard, and they're kind of an underage grassroots club in Dublin, but they're quite successful and probably a little bit more elite than the club I'd worked with before. And I was looking to do my UEFA B license. I'd done my other coaching badges, and one of the requirements was that I started working with more elite teams and needed to develop my knowledge of the game. So I went in, and Cherry Orchard had kind of 4 or 5 youth internationals, so it was a great kind of arena for me to develop. And I worked under a manager called Dave Collins, and really started to learn a lot about the game of football, I suppose, and working at a slightly higher level than I had before. I spent a few years here, and then I got my first taste of, I suppose, S&C in sports science when a League of Ireland team called UCD, University College Dublin, I had a contact who approached me and asked me to come in and do kind of an internship program with their under-19s team. So this was great for me, to get this opportunity to start to, get my foot in the door. And I suppose quite quickly, I spent 4 years there. And quite quickly, a guy called James Timmins moved on from the first team. And all of a sudden, I was kind of overseeing a first team, an under-19s, right down to an under-15. So I had to learn quite fast how to, I suppose, develop a long-term athletic development model for the underage structure. I was managing 4 different practitioners and recruiting different practitioners, learning to do things like manage budgets, facilities, and I suppose key personnel within the job. And then getting a bit of a taste for first team football, and this is probably my first experience of some silverware, and we actually had an opportunity to compete in the Europa League qualifying rounds. So it was my first taste of Europe, really. So as I said, I spent 4 years there, learned a huge amount. In the meantime, I had an approach by a club called Kilmacud Crokes, which is in the GAA, so Gaelic football. A new sport for me, a new game. I had to learn about, I suppose, the physical demands. The culture is different in Ireland. So for those who don't know, it's an amateur sport back home, but it operates at a very elite level. So I could have players in the gym from 6 a.m. doing a gym session. Those players would then go off and go to work. And then later that night, I might have them on a pitch at 8 p.m. And this UCD was probably a younger group of players, whereas Kilmacud Crokes were a very seasoned group of leaders that had kind of had a lot of success. So for me, it started to build my character as a coach dealing with these senior figures. And again, was lucky enough to have a little bit of success here along the way, and just get a little taste for a different sport, because I'd predominantly been in football and come through that kind of coaching background. I'm probably wearing different hats at this stage and trying to make a kind of full-time wage and salary out of sport, which is difficult. And I suppose Ireland wouldn't have the industry that the UK would have. So I'm doing some work in a school, for a private school local to my house, as a football coach, working with kids from anywhere from under 8s up to 18s, mixed level ability. So again, it goes back to that kind of fun and that side of things, less serious, but really enjoyed that time. And it allowed me to kind of learn how to deal with larger groups and develop, I suppose, skills like assertiveness. And I really enjoyed it, to be honest. At the same time, I saw myself and my friends saw a gap in the market for elite footballers in Ireland. And we noticed that they weren't getting the same kind of, resources or strength and conditioning structures as their counterparts in the UK. So we decided to set up a company called Advanced Athlete Development. And essentially we targeted youth elite footballers. We started off with 6 players in actually my local school gym. We had a pitch and a very, very basic gym. And over a couple of years, we built that company up to 60 plus regular players from different backgrounds, such as football, rugby, hockey. And again, I was now, you know, probably becoming more of maybe a businessman, or trying to be, you know, trying to manage websites, sales, budgets again. And I suppose parents were probably the main customer. Shortly after this, Dundalk approached me and asked me to interview for the job. And Dundalk, I suppose, were the leading side in Ireland in the Premier Division. They'd won a lot of league titles, cups, and, you know, got qualifications for the Europa League numerous times. So Stephen Kenny rang me and asked me to interview for the job, and I ended up getting the job. So I kind of shortly had to leave everything else behind, where I was kind of had multiple different clubs and a business. I left it all behind to go full time with Dundalk. And here, again, I went into a seasoned kind of dressing room full of winners and leaders. And again, I probably looked to develop my character here. The role was to lead the S&C and sports science department. And I got, again, to prepare, I suppose, a really good team for the demands of, you know, Europa League qualification rounds, Champions League qualification rounds, and just a great, probably one of the first groups outside of Kilmacud Crokes where just had that kind of, those senior players that ran the dressing room, and it's really developed me in different ways. So a little bit after that, I moved over to the UK. I applied for a job with the Arsenal Women's First Team. Did three kind of interview rounds and ended up getting it. And I was really happy in my role with Dundalk, and I was living with a good friend of mine. And I suppose at the time, the job offer came when I was quite happy and content with where I was. But I was single at the time and thought, look, this is probably my last chance to move abroad. You know, things could change very quickly in the next couple of years. So a couple of days later, I was in my car driving over on the ferry with my whole life in my back seat. And I've been here for the last 5 years as the lead strength and conditioning coach for the women's team. I feel it's probably been a different experience for me in the sense of it was my first, I suppose, role in women's sport and women's football. I'd come from a lot of Irish sports, so now I'm suddenly have 15 plus different nationalities to prepare for at the top of the women's game to try and win leagues and compete in the Champions League. So they're the challenges that were kind of thrown from there. And in the midst of that, about 2 years into the role, I got a phone call from Stephen Kenny, who was the manager at Dundalk at the time when I was there, who had become the senior international Irish manager for the men's team. And he had asked me to be part of his kind of his setup as the head of athletic performance for the under 21s men's team. So at this stage, I didn't know could I do the job, and I went back to the club, who were brilliant and allowed me to do a dual role for just under 3 years, working with the Irish men's team. And I suppose that was a real moment of pride for me, getting to work for my country. It was an opportunity to work on the other side of the fence, because I've been working with a lot of international teams at club for Arsenal, but I got to sit on the other side of the fence and see what it was like there. And I suppose our ultimate job was to develop players for the senior team, and we try and qualify for the European Championships, which we just missed out on in a penalty shootout against Israel. And that brings me to today, where I'm still with the Arsenal Women's First Team, and my current role is the lead rehabilitation, strength and conditioning coach. So a little bit of a change in role. And yeah, that's where I am today.
Awesome, mate. Great breakdown of the whole story, but also I think you've really underlined some of the skills that you've picked up along the way as well in those different opportunities, and also that it just highlights the fact that some of the gambles that you took along the way as well, like you said, packing your life up and moving over to the UK and everything, there's a lot in there for people to take. We spoke about it before we started recording about the team that are now assembling at Arsenal, a great lineup of practitioners you've got at the club, I know. And you just mentioned it there that your role has recently changed a little bit in terms of responsibility. So just give us a little bit of breakdown on that change and some of what it was like before, maybe what some of the new responsibilities are now. Yeah, what's that looking like?
Yeah, so my previous role before was to I suppose, was the lead strength and conditioning coach for the team. So that was to prepare the team for the demands of the game. I suppose, where did I fit in? I think if I look back on my roles throughout my career, I probably felt comfortable sitting in between the kind of technical team with the coaches and maybe the performance department slash the medical department as that kind of communication. I think where I grew up and had that background of playing football and coaching football, I found it a little bit more comfortable to have that kind of terminology with the coaches and understand, I suppose, their way of thinking and their language a little bit more. So I think that was the role I probably fulfilled in that team environment. But from a day-to-day point of view, I would myself or you know, one of the other S&Cs would prep the team in pre-training preparation in the gym. One of us might lead the warm-up when we'd swap that over. We obviously had, you know, travel to games and it was slightly different in terms of demands. Whereas now, I suppose, as the game's evolved, we now have a designated lead kind of rehab physiotherapist, Rose Glendinning, and then myself as the rehab S&C. So I suppose the slightly different one, I'm a bit more based at the club. In terms of what my role looks like each day, I probably lead a little bit more on the mid to end stage return to play. So my focus will be a little bit more on enhancing performance and let's say, I suppose, transfer to the pitch if you were to be rigid about it. But in saying that, you know, I'd have still quite a lot of involvement in the early stage return to play. So for a long-term injury, that might look like developing upper body strength, off-feet conditioning, collaborating with the physio, I suppose, on early focuses of hypertrophy or strength programs. So I think it's not rigid and I think it's very collaborative and both practitioners probably are highly involved throughout the whole process. But yeah, no, it's a little bit of a different change of pace but I'm really enjoying it.
How have you found that? I mean, in terms of obviously players in that situation are generally going to be at some stage of being injured, whether they're getting close to return or early stage of the injury process. How have you found keeping in touch with the rest of the squad? So in terms of the fit players, keeping relationships, I know you've got relationships from the previous role, but how have you found that in terms of this role as well?
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I think I'm probably very recently just kind of come out of the team role and I still have a little bit of team involvement as we've got a guy coming in very soon to fully take over my responsibilities. But even with the transition period, I have found I've drifted from probably some of the players that I have a lot more contact points with each day and even some of the staff members I would have a lot more contact points with each day. So it's slightly different. I tend to have like a smaller cohort or group of players that I work with each day. But I think the benefits of that for me and why I wanted to go towards this role was really that exact point, was that I get to work with small groups. I get to be a little bit more detailed and have more time to actually coach each day versus when I've got a large group of people and it's more facilitating. I get to challenge my own periodization in terms of, you know, be a little bit more detailed in that area. I tend to build closer relationships with that small group of players. And I really just get a lot of fulfillment out of, I suppose, the roller coaster you go through with the rehab players, because it's not all smooth and you do end up, you know, in the trenches with them at times, but the rewards of getting a player back, you know, whether that's a short-term injury that you've got to get back for a certain game, and if that player can get on and affect the game or score a goal, I find that really rewarding. And then obviously even bigger in the long-term injury where you've spent, you know, 9 months plus with a player, that's probably quite an emotional returned when they return to the pitch. That's quite an emotional piece because you've spent so much contact time with them, which is different to the team role.
100%. Yeah, I think that the stuff that gets highlighted in the rehab process is a player return, isn't it? And hopefully having success when they return. Like you mentioned, there's a lot of twists and turns along the way, which I'm sure you've experienced. But in terms of that rehab process, how do you go about structuring it? How do you go about shaping that process?
So yeah, I was having to think about this question. I think where we probably start as a performance team or as a rehab department is looking at, I suppose, the mechanism of injury, which is something you can obviously access quite quickly using the kind of video analysts. And then later in those acute couple of days after the injury, we're looking at the diagnosis, whether that's clinical or whether we're, you know, looking through a scan. And I think the mechanism of injury is very important in my role to, if we take an example of something like a hamstring and we're looking at a stretch mechanism versus maybe a more sprint-based mechanism, that's going to dictate, which we'll get into probably a little bit later in the podcast, of how we return that athlete to play. So what are the end stage actions? What are the exercise progressions we're looking at to get that player back to the pitch? And then I suppose the injury site, whether that's distal or proximal, if we were taking something like a hamstring again, is going to, again, dictate where we go with that rehab. And from there, we probably move to the athlete profile themselves. So this is maybe a little bit more holistic and probably ties in with my philosophy is I like to look at, I suppose, from an objective point of view, the position of the player and the positional demands of that player in terms of planning the rehab. But what I like to look into a lot more is probably the individual themselves. So what's the character of the player like? Are they, you know, are they going to be someone who's quite anxious in rehab? Are they someone who, you know, who wants to be aggressive and go to that accelerated model? Are they, you know, how old are they? Are they a senior player who's in their 30s? Are they a young development player? Are they an integral player to the squad? Like, is it someone that the manager is banging on the door to get back in? Is it a fringe player? Is it a recurring injury we're looking at? You know, I think kind of building that profile at the start of the injury is really important. And these are things I'm saying out loud that you might necessarily have to document, because if you know your players well, you probably have an idea of some of these things, and a lot of practitioners probably do them naturally. And then I think it moves into the context of, okay, the first context is it's first team football. So that doesn't change straight away. That's going to be different to academy football in the sense of first team football. We're going to have to look at that accelerated model a little bit more. You know, results mean more. You know, is there any people in the player's position? What's the squad availability like? Are we down in centre halves? That might also have a pressure in terms of how quickly we have to return the player. Is there pressure from the manager or the player themselves to try and get themselves back in the team or not? And yeah, risk versus reward, important games coming up, I suppose. Do you have like a cup final coming up, or do we have a few weeks of not that there is lesser games, but I suppose there is. And risk versus reward of if we do go for that accelerated, more aggressive model and the player does break down, what does that look like? You know, how does the player feel about that? You know, are we going to lose them then for 6 weeks instead of 3 weeks? And I think once we have all that information, we then look at timelines and scenario planning. So I suppose first you might say you look at the research, but then how many papers are there out there? If we take the hamstring example again, done on elite female footballers and grade one hamstring injuries for argument's sake. So what we tend to do is document all our rehab a kind of into case studies and document them. So when we look back, we can actually look at, right, we've had four other players, or hopefully not the same player, who has also had this type of injury. What were the timelines that we brought this player back into? What have we been able to do in the past? And have a more specific look at our own population. And then weigh in the context above that we spoke about, weigh in the athlete profile, and then get the key decision stakeholders, I suppose, in the room. So it might be the lead physio, the lead S&C. It could be a doctor if needed in the rehab, and the head of medicine to kind of come up with a rough ballpark of how we're going to try and return that player. And then include the player and the manager in that decision once we've got some sort of plan. And I think the last bit is probably moving into the planning, which I think we'll get stuck into a little bit more as we go through the podcast. But we're probably looking at the periodization overview. So we're looking at the end stage, you know, whether that's a game we're looking at, we're trying to reverse engineer that process. And then we're trying to look at, okay, how many sessions might we have in terms of how many pitch sessions do I have to build that player up to end stage? How many strength sessions can I get in the gym? How do I fit my plyometrics in? Do I have enough of them to get through my model? Can I get them back into, the manager might want them back into a number of team trainings before they go back in with the team to play a game. So can we get them into that? And is it possible to go this accelerated, or do we have to be a little bit more conservative? And then how do we fit in our objective testing? So what actually clears them to play? What are we looking at that's going to allow them from? So we're going to have our, I suppose, subjective and our own way of our experience in our field. But can we back that up and kind of have objective testing to also help us make these decisions?
Brilliant, mate. Just before we expand on that, in terms of the planning, the programming, and the decisions that go into that, how do you manage expectations of the player? Like you mentioned, there's different sort of personalities and character types you're going to get. Some that expect to be back really quickly, regardless of the injury. Some that maybe understand it a little bit better. But also the other side of that, like you mentioned, it's first team football, it's results based. So you've got coaches, you've got head coaches, managers that are going to have an expectation of that as well. So how do you go about managing expectation to those different stakeholders?
I think we try and use that plan, first of all, to really get our ducks in order. And then in the midst of that, you're probably sussing out the various parties. So you're probably having some talk with the player. You're probably having a little bit of a, you know, corridor conversation with the manager. So you're kind of taking those considerations into your plan. I think communication is just really important, and I think that's where the objective stuff does come into play, because we can in turn, for example, if the manager says, look, I want that player back in this time frame, we can say, look, well, we've had 10 hamstring injuries in the last 2 years of this grade, and we've tended to only return them in, I don't know, 16, 17 days. You're asking for us to get this done in 12 or 13 days. I'm not sure that's realistic. And as well as that, you've got a player who tends to be a little bit more anxious in return to play, who's had previous hamstring injury. So we probably have layers here that are actually looking at the opposite, and getting that 17 return would be great success. And then same with the player. I think usually by now I don't know if I've rehabbed most of the team, but a lot of the team, you have a fair idea of the players who want to be aggressive or opt for themselves for that accelerated rehab. But you're obviously going to show them the risks if they do take that decision along with us. And you've got the players who you just know straight away are a little bit more conservative. You know, this is their body in the end of the day, so it's very important to them. That's their tool to play the game. So you have to listen to the player as well and take that consideration in. But communication, like, not to be generic about it, is like almost over communicating and as much as possible in that early phase.
If you work in academy football or with youth athletes, you need to go and check out the latest presentation that we've added to our online community library. It's a presentation from our recent event at West Bromwich Albion by youth athlete consultant physiotherapist Angela Jackson. It was on the management of low back pain in youth athletes. And Angela covered a number of different aspects. She spoke about the different stages of growth and how that impacts our programming. She talked about correctly identifying lumbar stress fractures and also using age-appropriate language for diagnosis as well. We've released a few previews across Instagram and YouTube, which seem to be getting everyone talking. But to access the full presentation, if you go to footballfitfed.com, sign yourself up to a free 30-day trial, you'll be able to get full access to the presentation there and join plenty of coaches from around the world on our network as well. So go and check it out, footballfitfed.com, click the community tab, sign yourself up there and check out the latest upload from Angela Jackson. Here's part two of the podcast with Owen Clarkin. Just in that sort of accelerated program with that player that wants to take that approach, you obviously go through the risk factors and everything like that. How then what sort of feedback do you get from the player with that in that scenario? Does it tend to still be like, no, I want to get back as fast as I can? Or when you start mentioning the risk, does that seem to change anything within the plan and the process?
Yeah, we usually try and have three plans. So we usually start with a plan A, and we always draw in a plan B and a C. And so plan A being the most accelerated, plan B one step down, and plan C one step down again. And our aim is usually to achieve that plan A, because we've used all that kind of information that we spoke about. But absolutely, like, you'll get times where a player isn't happy with plan A because plan A is too conservative. They want to go faster. And that's where, you know, you usually have built a relationship with the player. You know, you have to look at what they need versus what they want. You know, you've had enough conversations with different people to have come to a decision. And you might have the conversation to say, look, there is a chance, there's an outside chance that you might get there, but you've got to clear these markers before you do that. And I think if they can then get to that point where they've cleared your objective markers, they've cleared more pitch-based markers, physios are happy with them from their side of things, you know, you can give them that outside chance, you can give them that dangling carrot. But I think at the same time, there's a time and a place where you then also have to be strong with them and kind of say, look, whether that's from a tissue healing point of view, or whether that's from they're just not ready to go to that next step, there's a time and place that you can't always make the player happy.
100%. Just another thing on that, How much do you think your experience, because obviously you picked up a lot of experience now with players, but also in the rehab process as well, and alongside you, I know you've got some incredibly experienced practitioners as well. How much do you think that impacts how confident you are in terms of the approach that you take compared to maybe take yourself back a few years when you've first starting out in terms of this confidence of the accelerated approach, especially? How much do you think that factors in?
Yeah, I think it's huge, and I think I still have a long way to go and still developing that experience, and particularly in this new role. But I suppose my philosophy is probably a holistic one, that I suppose the individual is at the center, and building relationships is probably the first point. And I'll try build that with putting care at the center of it. And I think once you can get to that place where the player trusts you and knows that you fundamentally do care about them, that you regularly communicate them, explain to them why we're doing what we're doing, I think the journey or those kind of conversations, which could be a little bit more difficult, become easier. And while they might not agree with you on the next steps, they respect it. And I think that holistic model will be something that, I suppose, as you said, there, without all those other previous experiences before, whether that was, running my own business or working with the young kids to start, going into bigger environments with more elite players and more challenging players, I think it's harder as a young practitioner to do that. And that's why you need that experience. That's why you need those contact hours. And that's why sometimes in the early days, you have to be willing to find ways to get that. And even if it's, not the best pay to start, which at times that can be frustrating, we know.
Yeah, definitely. So I know every example is going to be context dependent. There's going to be differences with, like you said, every player, but even similar injuries, there's going to be different scenarios, positions, type of player, and all the rest of it. But it's just interesting to hear how much that experience like helps you and guides you on that process as well. Oh, and can you just talk to us about, you mentioned it briefly just before in terms of the monitoring the rehab process, how you go about that and how that structures into getting the player back.
Yeah, so I think there's probably a few different layers here. So I think you've got your objective testing criteria, and I suppose the first question is, why do we do that? And I think because sometimes we just do it because we do it, or because another practitioner told us to do it, and we don't really understand what we're trying to test. So I think we're trying to, in my head, we're trying to limit unnecessary risk and demonstrate the necessary physical qualities to, I suppose, safely progress the player through each stage of the rehab process. So generally, we're looking to return the players back to some sort of baseline level, or if it's a longer term injury and we've time to do so, we're looking to build them back to our gold standards for the team and our population. And usually, where possible, we're looking for to reduce asymmetry and bring that down below 10%, if that's realistic for kind of each specific injury. So I think when looking at the criteria, we look at probably the specific movement and what we want to achieve, and what objective tests we have that can measure that physical qualities and that underpin that movement. So, for example, if we're taking something like a rec femme, a kicking base, and it was a kicking base injury, we might look in a controlled setting to layer that back into how much force can the athlete produce compared to baseline levels if we have them, or our gold standards, using something like a handheld dyno. We might try to look at the next phase of that might be how fast can they produce that force, again compared to baseline levels of gold standards. Or if we're looking at something, I suppose, like an Achilles or a calf type injury, we might use a drop jump or a 10-5 test to, monitor and restore reactive strength before we put them out in the pitch to do the movement, which could be maximal effort sprinting. Because if we haven't restored those qualities, it might be too soon for us to then progress on out in the pitch. So that would be, I think, how I'd look at it from inside the gym and objective testing, that kind of classic style. But I think going back to more of a, I don't know if this is a holistic model, but a holistic way of looking at it, if you're then looking at the gym, and the gym being a controlled environment and a regression from, say, the pitch, for argument's sake, I think you're looking at your basic principles. So again, you're looking at reverse engineering. What's the end stage mechanism or action I'm trying to achieve on the pitch, and how do I reverse engineer that back through the rehab continuum. So starting with the end of mind and looking at exercise tolerance to qualify the athlete through each stage isn't necessarily an objective number that I get to do that, but I can start to use my experience and my playbooks and models and systems to develop through that. So to give an example, I suppose, of that, if we're looking at deceleration or a change of direction with your end stage action on the pitch, just ensuring that you've qualified the athlete inside the gym by going through the necessary regressions. So that might look like a walk and lunge as something very controlled and working towards, say, I don't know, a band or cable assisted lunge into double and single leg horizontal jumps. And that might give us that foundational exercise continuum before we start to progress things on the pitch or alongside progressing things on the pitch, but understanding what comes first. And then using the fundamentals of progressive overload. So I don't think we should deviate away from our fundamental S&C principles. So apply a metric example. It doesn't necessarily have to be load that we're always increasing. We're increasing intensity, and that could be from, I don't know, for plyometrics, that could be from low to high. It could be from vertical to horizontal or multi-directional. It could be from slow to fast or bilateral to unilateral. If we're looking at strength as an example, it might be going from early stage isometric to eccentric work. You know, we might have limited range to start, and then we're developing that into full range of motion. If we go back to the hamstring injury, we might be looking at going from hip to knee dominant work, or again, slow to fast exercises in the gym where we're looking at high force, slower work, but eventually we're looking to be fast and develop transfer on the pitch and kind of utilizing that dynamic correspondence model. And moving to the last phase, which is the pitch, is where probably one of the areas I enjoy the most is we're probably still looking at similar principles, but this time when we reverse engineer our model, we're looking at the individual game or sorry, the individual positional demands over a given amount of training sessions or weeks. We tend to utilize the control chaos continuum and develop kind of specific criteria for each injury. So in terms of football actions, and if we take the rec fem just to keep it aligned type injury, the player may have injured that rec fem by, let's say the mechanism was shooting a goal. We then need to develop a model to reverse engineer this, to regress this specific movement or this technical action, utilizing that same model from inside, that kind of exercise tolerance progressions, as well as the objective testing we spoke about inside. So in the early stage, this might look like we might limit technical actions when they first get on the pitch. It might be dribbling. We might develop that to shorter or moderate passing. We might then progress distance and the weight of the pass until eventually we get to striking the ball, which is how the athlete actually injured their rec fem in the first place. So I usually like to then replicate the exact mechanism to give the player confidence before they return to the team. So an example I used this year was actually when the player injured themselves in training, striking a ball. She actually hit the ball top corner, and then she felt the injury. We actually got out and did the exact drill in the very end stage to give her confidence to show that she can do that again. And I was just happy that she hit the top corner quick enough, so I didn't have to keep doing lots of repetitions. But I think that's the piece sometimes that we need, because that's an example of a really small injury. So maybe the confidence side of things isn't that influential or that important. But if you go back to a bigger injury, such as an ACL or a long-term injury, that going back to that place where the athlete probably has a huge amount of fear, and putting them back into that position numerous times and showing them maybe another way of moving that might have prevented that injury, but putting them back in that space more from a confidence point of view, I think is massive. And you know, if you can layer that with video and show them again, you know, them doing that after, you can really instill that sense of confidence, which I believe plays a big role in preventing the re-injury.
100%. It was something I was going to ask around confidence, because it's massive, isn't it, in that process. The other thing I was going to say is, would you say it's fair to say that as you go through that process, and especially when you get players back out onto the grass, not that your communication is going to be lower when you're in that gym environment, because I know it's not, but in terms of the feedback you're getting from the player and what they should feel, the confidence, would that increase the amount that you're getting back in terms of feedback at that time?
Yeah. I think something I was thinking about before was kind of, I think you've got this kind of, this is something I robbed from the psychologist Matt Donville at the club, where he kind of talked about this challenge versus support model. And that probably comes off the pitch a little bit in terms of when to push the player and when to maybe put your arm around it. But if you bring that onto the pitch, something I thought about was, or something I tried to think about when bringing them back, is what does that player need early in the return to play on the pitch? So, for example, they may be carrying anxiety to return to the pitch. They may need a high level of success in the environment. So I might want to hurt certain physical markers on the pitch, and that's my prime focus for that player that day. But I want the player to feel really good about themselves and getting back into playing football. So in that instance, we might drive high success. So if it's me and the player working individually and one of the targets is to hit a mini goal, I might make that almost too easy for the player in terms of their level of footballing ability. But while doing that, I'm working on a physical quality that I'm trying to develop, and I'm probably challenging them. So they're not getting challenged from both ends. And then as that develops into the later stage of the rehab, I think then we're starting to go into that chaos of the control chaos continuum. We're then starting to drive and play around with that dial of potentially giving them less success in certain areas and trying to overload them from a chaotic point of view and a psychological point of view. So that dial, I think, works on and off the pitch. I think off the pitch is that other side of things where you might see a player who's, as you said, in the trenches or on the bottom end of that roller coaster in their journey. What do they need to be challenged that day by me? Or do they probably need a little bit more support that day? Is that the day to really push them on the pitch? Maybe. You know, maybe it is in the end stage. Maybe when they come back to the team, they're actually going to have days where they're low and still need to be challenged. But that feel part of it, I think, is huge. And that's the bit that is gained with experience. And I think, as I said, I'm still developing that area too.
Brilliant. Can you touch on where the wider MDT comes into this as well? Because I know we've mentioned before about the team that you've got around you. And like I said, loads of experience, loads of great practitioners, but just that importance of the collaboration throughout this process.
Yeah, there's so many different people involved in the process. So hard to probably name everyone, but I suppose if you put the player in the middle, and you've kind of got these branches coming out of each side, and they're the contact points maybe the player has each day. So that could be, it could be nutrition, it could be the tech team, even though they're in rehab, they're still going to have those contact points. It could be the sports scientists, the team-based S&C, myself, the physio, the rehab physio, the psych, you know, like it's endless probably in how many contact points they have. So we do try and reduce the amount of contact points they have. So if certain people are working with a specific player, it's their responsibility to be the main communicators. Otherwise, the player ends up with lots of different information and sometimes maybe some conflicting information. But how I probably utilize it is, I suppose, to take Fran Silver, the sports scientist, as an example. He's very, very strong in the area of kind of data analytics, you know, kind of building dashboards. You know, he's good across things like the game demands in terms of the GPS, ensuring kind of reliability, standardization, and validity of our testing. And he's kind of someone who asks different types of questions and thinks a little bit differently. So I would utilize him massively in rehab to lean on him for his strengths. And he tends to look after a lot of that kind of, as I suppose, the data analytics and builds me a lot of dashboards that I would find hard to be as successful with some of the rehabs without him kind of there. I think tech integration is huge. So the tech team themselves, when I say tech integration, as we talked about, managing their expectations. But not only that, I suppose, when the player's getting closer to the team, leaning on them. So although I've done some football coaching badges, you know, they're still streets ahead in this area, and they'll have their own game model in terms of how they want the player to play. So sitting down with some of them to rob ideas off them when I'm doing my end stage rehab, to start implementing some more kind of tactical constraints into that cognitive side of the game, but from a tactical point of view, I think that's quite important. to bridge that gap between training and then building a really close relationship with them as the player does return to playing training, and kind of gaining feedback from them as well in terms of what they see. Because if someone's been out for 6 months, 9 months, 3 or 4 months, you know, they're going to see, look at it through more of a technical, tactical lens than I probably will. And me gaining feedback there in terms of what the player needs for the last couple of weeks or months is invaluable. Psych input, we've started to work a lot closer with the psych on certain injuries. And, you know, sometimes if a player does have high anxiety, and I've leaned on my experience for years, you know, the performance side can really help with either working with them one-to-one, but if the player prefers to maybe work alongside us, how can I use him as a tool to advise and help me? So if a player is, I don't know, coming back from an injury who's particularly fearful, can we utilise questionnaires to gain some objective data to help with our decision-making and use some of his frameworks? And then the physio, the other physio is the biggest one. Like, that's your team. That's your the person you're planning with, collaborating with, building models with every day. You're the two main contacts for that player. So you guys being aligned and giving the same information to the player each day is so important, because I've had experiences in my career where maybe for one reason or another, we're thinking differently and we give the player two different pieces of information, and it really doesn't go down well with the player because they start to feel, well, just like they're getting two bits of information, really. That could be overwhelmed. That could be, you know, what's my direction? And it adds a layer that shouldn't be there. So having shared models, like even if that's going into something like a plyometric model, us having an agreed alignment of how that looks through a continuum. Because if we've got two different ideas and she then passes over to me and I take it on, and I go a completely different way with it, it's not going to work. So that's something I'm really looking forward to building a bit more as I kind of go into this role. With more bandwidth, I suppose.
Oh, brilliant! That's like the evolution of the department and everyone you've got around you. But in terms of yourself as a practitioner, where do you see, obviously with the change of role, definitely going to be one. And we spoke before and we said, as much as it isn't pure specialist, because you're still covering quite a wide range of topics, injuries, and still having a big impact with the team on a day-to-day basis as well. But where else do you see your evolution as a practitioner?
Yeah, I think this is probably the next step in terms of starting to specialise a little bit more in an area. I think for me, in my own kind of philosophy, I'm trying to always develop myself, whether that's through CPD, probably could be better at things like networking. But the biggest thing that's probably bang for your buck that I've probably done more of the last couple of years is mentorship programs. So a good example of that would be I've been working with Lee Harrington for the last year or so, and he's a physiotherapist. So someone with a completely different skill set to me, with a lot more experience than me, particularly around, you know, return to play specifically, but also sees it from a different lens. So Lee's been excellent for me just to, you know, jump on a call with him for an hour. I might take 2-3 pages of notes and then I go and implement that for the next 4 to 6 weeks and jump on again with him. And what I've got from that is just more than I've gotten any course I've done in my life. And he's always on the other end of the phone to kind of do that. He does charge though, just so I'm like, people don't think it's a free service. And then I've also worked with Sam Portland this year, who I know you've had on the podcast. And myself and Sam started working together on developing some speed models for return to play. Sam's really good in that area, I like the way he thinks. But also Sam's just been great in terms of that mentorship side of things to lean on, and for lots of different reasons. And he's got great experience and different experience and skill set to me. So although we cross over in areas, he's been brilliant as well to develop parts of this pathway. So I see in terms of evolving, I want to pick as many people's brain as possible and where I can, if I can get the leading guys in the industry, guys and girls in the industry to develop and learn off. Like that's the area that seems to be working for me best now. And I think then taking those things, building models with them, trying to quantify them into like playbooks or jump on here with you or do a, you know, presentation here and there and try and solidify my learning by teaching what I've maybe learned, if that makes sense. So that's the biggest area, and I'd recommend anyone who is a young or mid stage practitioner to, there's always someone there who knows a little bit more than you, or in a specific area who can help you out. So that's a space I'm really interested in.
I think on the flip side of that as well, for someone like yourself, it's great to hear more of your work though as well, because someone with the experience that you've got, there's going to be a lot of people that will listen to this and see some of the other work that you've put out and learn a hell of a lot. So I think that's something else for people in your position that's similar to, in terms of getting work out there, is valuable, isn't it, for the industry as a whole?
Yeah, no, that's it. I think it's something I'd like to do myself in time, is to maybe, deliver some of that as I have time and more experience to start doing that, helping younger practitioners and trying to offer my own experience, as well. But I just think it's a huge area for us, and within the industry, it's a fairly small industry in that sense. And if you're willing to, I suppose, invest in yourself, and you know, I know sometimes we don't always make have the biggest salaries, but I do think it will go a long way. And I think if you invest that type of CPD into yourself, you will get it back eventually.
Yeah, no, 100% agree. We spoke recently on the podcast with Jordan about mentors and mentorships, and there's definitely huge value in it. Oh, and that's been incredible, mate. The detail's been superb, and it'll be great to see how the role develops and hopefully maybe get a podcast in a few months' time, maybe just to catch up and see how things have been going, how things have been implemented. But just in the meantime, if people want to reach out, where would you direct them?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter. I use it fairly infrequently, and I think my handle is, or X, sorry, I should say now. My handle is just Owen Clark in my name. And I'm not currently using many other social media platforms. I've got my own personal account on Instagram and stuff like that. So Twitter's probably the best place to get me. And yeah, thanks a million for having me on, Ben. I've really enjoyed it.
Awesome, mate. No, thanks for your time. Cheers, Owen.
Bye, man.
It was great to catch up with Owen. Big thank you to him for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate him giving up his time. Obviously, it was great to talk through the transition of his role into this more rehab-based role, you see more of these roles seem to be coming up recently. So anyone that's in a similar position will probably be able to relate to a lot of the things that Owen spoke about. Also, just early on in his career, with the skills he picked up through the numerous different roles that he mentioned, obviously the more technical side, the more S&C side, and then into more of a rehab setting as well. The other thing that stood out for me with the chat with Owen is that he took gambles and took chances as well. So the move over to the UK, and obviously the taking the chance, led to the role at Arsenal, and then that has transitioned through into this current role that he's in now. The other thing he spoke about was the rehab setting, giving him a little bit more a scope to work with small groups or individuals and be more detailed, which is something Tom King spoke about recently on the podcast. And then in terms of the rehab process, understanding the mechanism of the injury, working back from that point, and then also working back up to that point and giving confidence to the player or the athlete, and knowing individuals as well. So we spoke about that in terms of the team setting and how he's staying around the team and keeping his relationships that he's built and the importance of those as well. So yeah, really enjoyed catching up with Owen, and definitely someone that I'll be looking to get on the podcast again, and hopefully speaking at one of our events at some point as well. Really knowledgeable practitioner and someone whose work, I said to him after, it'd be great to see more stuff out from him as well, because there's some brilliant practitioners that get on with their day to day and you probably don't see loads from them out online and on podcasts and webinars and things. And Owen's definitely one of those that I'd love to see more from. So I hope you enjoyed the episode with Owen. As always, please give it a share, but also share it more specifically to people that are definitely within the rehab setting, people that are going to benefit from this episode, because obviously it's a little bit more specific around rehab. As always, if you've not left us a review A Spotify review will be very much appreciated. A quick click of the 5 stars. If you've got a little bit more time, you're over on iTunes, click the 5 stars and leave us a short comment as well. I do read through all those because there's some great detail on some guests people have enjoyed and topics they've enjoyed over on there as well. And last thing from me, make sure to go and give our sponsors a follow. They make this podcast happen. That is Hytro, Rezl and The Good Prep, all doing some amazing work. So go and check them out on social media. Again, massive thank you for listening. I will speak to you again next week in episode 289.